Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner's pies and walked off to look for America. Kathy, I said, as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh. Michigan seems like a dream to me now. Took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said, be careful, his bow tie is really a camera. Toss me a cigarette, I think there's one in my raincoat. We smoked the last one an hour ago. So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine. And the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for America. All come to look for America. All come to look for America. We're here tonight looking for America. That's what this show is all about. Finding the real America, where people help each other and love each other instead of hurting each other and hating each other. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio. It's a listener-supported radio, and they deserve your support. It's a great network. So head over to revolution.radio, show them some love. And I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer. And I have a little problem with Mike, but just give me a second and we will. Okay, Mike should be on now, and we're ready for your introduction. Mike, I'm sorry you missed the song.
Hello, Chuck. We welcome these special guests, Julius Alifong, Michael Annis, Rosanna Frechette, Karen Kitkowski, Frank Cordell, and Phil Ferruggio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, in Yaoundé, Cameroon, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, Florida, in Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Denver, Colorado, and wherever you are. The February issue of Penn Magazine is now available at pennmagazine.us. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., one of the first honest researchers into the murder of John F. Kennedy. It's all connected that day and this. There's an ongoing thread. That's why it's important to keep doing the work, because if truth does not come to the U.S., it will implode and possibly destroy the world as well. So join with us and let's save the world. The February issue of Penn Magazine features an article by Winston Wu showing why the United States has never put men on the moon. The January issue of Penn Magazine features a piece by Craig McKee showing how the Boston bombers were framed. They didn't do it. It was a government psyop, hoax event. Really, seriously. The December issue of Penn Magazine features a piece by James Tracy showing that we are being lied to about what really happened at Sandy Hook. It's all a part of a big game, a lie. Toward what end? We can only speculate. The first issue of Penn Magazine, launched in November 2017, featured a piece focusing on James Barrett, James Fetzer and Kevin Barrett, two honest journalists who are trying to tell us the truth about America. Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. We thank you for taking the time to read Penn Magazine. You can see all of the issues at our one site, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. Mike Politek, editor, Chuck Gregory, publisher.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, we stopped at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites. Here's Phil Ferruccio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
The fix is in. Good evening, working stiffs. The fix is actually always in. There's a must-read for any sports fan, Brian Tuohy's, T-U-O-H-Y-S, book from 2010, The Fix is In. Tuohy covers most professional sports and how many times certain games are fixed for various reasons. Sometimes a larceny is done for the strictly betting angles. Sometimes a larceny is done by certain teams to help them to win games. Sometimes a larceny is done by the leagues in concert with the media to assure getting the best viewing ratings. All in all, my old Sicilian friend once stated, things are not what they seem. This writer, a lifetime football fan, can cite so many recent developments that reveal to the ever-watchful eye the collusion by most likely the referees and the league they work for, either the NFL or the NCAA, that affect the outcomes of certain games. Recently, both the comeback wins by America's pro team, the New England Patriots, in last year's Super Bowl, and America's college team, the Alabama Crimson Tide, in this year's NCAA championship, smell worse than week-old fish. In both cases, it was the referees, most likely instructed by the two leagues, to make or not make key calls during the second halves of both games to cement the fix. More than ever before, astute observers of football are being added to the list of conspiracy believers. Most recently, Sirius Radio sports talk host Christopher Russo's 15-year-old son. Actually, the best example of the fix being in were the presidential elections of 2000 and 2004. They revealed to anyone with even half a brain the corrupt nature of this empire. Talk about banana republic. I mean that after both elections, investigative researchers had documented how electronic voting machines were fixed to make sure that Bush Jr. was the victor. The hanging Chad controversy, the schemes to assure long voting lines in Democratic districts, and the use of incorrect felon lists was only the tip of the iceberg. It was those electronic machines manufactured, by the way, by Republican donors that really sealed the deal. So much so that in 2004, it was little Dickie Morris, you remember him, Clinton's old polling guru during his presidency, who had by then deserted to the other side, who let it out while on live TV. Morris was on the election return show for one network to offer his expertise. When he saw the exit polls were overwhelmingly in favor of John Kerry in the crucial state of Ohio, Morris stated, well, those polls are for sure. Kerry will then win Ohio. When the state and the election went to Bush Jr., Morris actually stated on air that something was fishy. Sadly, it seems that in this military-industrial empire, the fix is paramount. What makes this sadness cry deeper is the fact that our two political parties served the empire so well. Throughout the government shutdown crisis recently, you never saw or heard those two puppet parties or the embedded mainstream media lackeys ever mention that half our tax dollars go for military spending, while our safety nets are full of holes and our cities are short of funds. Both parties will stand and salute, along with the whoring journalists, the flag that was stolen from us by these phony warriors. Cold War was a fix, Korea and Vietnam a fix, and all the succeeding foreign interventions a fix. When will the majority of us, the good and decent and truly patriotic folks, be the role models for the others among us who still believe in this fairy tale? Thank you.
In 2008, when we started the New American Dream website, and in 2011, the radio show, the premise has always been that there are no wrong questions. And what that meant was nobody is talking about things that are important. Nobody asking any questions. So please question this bullshit. And we should not feel we're doing anything wrong by asking questions. Those should be allowed, even encouraged. And if we are allowed to ask all the questions we have, and if there were someone willing to listen and provide answers, there would be no need for despair or dysfunction. We have the proof, of course. Sandy Hook, Boston, Oklahoma City, JFK, RFK, King, Las Vegas were operations set up by the U.S. government and others, and by inference, every single one of the others. San Bernardino, LAX, Charlottesville, Orlando, the Wellstone murder, and at least a dozen others. Have you read your William Bloom and John Perkins and Douglas Valentine regarding the incredible dirty trick psyops the CIA and FBI have done over decades around the world to undermine any leader who tries to work for his or her people? Of course, they would do the same thing here, especially here, you old son of a Bubba. You are the most important piece of the universe dominance scheme puzzle there has ever been in the history of history. We give mountains of money to the military to expand the empire and to kill and to gain even more wealth for the already filthy rich. If the soldiers really want to do something, they might go to Pennsylvania Avenue or the CIA building or the FBI building, where they can fight and die and actually do something about fighting for freedom and have their lives not be just a big joke. Wasted. We'll even tie yellow ribbons around the trees and the car antennas. We don't even know we are living as part of an empire. Good Americans, good Romans. And we do all we can to scratch and survive and live our lives while meanwhile. It's a big deal. It's the whole enchilada. It's your parents' lives, your children and grandchildren. Take a moment. Sit by yourself on a park bench. Maybe put classical music on or the logical song on your headphones and tell yourself, because even you don't really believe it. You don't want to. Nobody died at Sandy Hook or Boston. The whole Las Vegas shooting was an act. And there are, of course, more performances scheduled. Oh, and by the way, we didn't go to the moon either. And yet we believe in football. And we believe in the military. We will sit for hours and through hundreds of mind melting commercials. For what reason, we have no idea. The New American Dream, not of new homes and toasters, but of becoming the kind of people we always thought we were. That is what the world needs. That is what the world is demanding of us, right here, right now. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Crafts and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fist clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message, Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been since 9/11 accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. Well, the nuts have finally arrived in ping-pong South Korea for the Winter Olympics. President Cosmonaut stands on the balcony of the hotel in his Johnny Cash footy pajamas with his coffee, looking out over ping-pong South Korea. "When does this shindig get started?" he said. "I think in a few weeks," shouted Imelda Nutt from inside a room. "A few weeks," said Cosmonaut. "Why are we here so early?" "You wanted to come, dear," said Imelda. "I must be crazy," he said. "Yes, dear." Meanwhile, Rusty the Patsy, Muhammad Ali the terrorist, Jews the limo driver, Slappy the house alien, Mama Pajama Jemima the MK Ultra trainer, Warren Beatty the secretary of getting things right, and Morgan Freeman, secretary of the War of the Worlds, with red devils and sickles and hammers and Stalin, Lenin, and Boris and Natasha painted on their butts, are heading toward Ping Pong Square. The Bubbas, who will be in the bobsled competition as simulated Russians, Bubba Barbuski and Bubba Bobovich, are busy practicing, using hair dryers to simulate intense wind action right in their face and sticking their heads into the beer chest to get used to having ice really close to your face. Meanwhile, Bubba Bubba and Bubba Brad and Bubba Jennifer and Bubba Carl, who are planning to compete in the Olympic Quidditch competition, are jumping off the RV in their on their brooms. And Fred from the basement office is keeping all what really should be kept secret, still secret from Americans, and the child left behind, are back in the big white house in the basement maintenance of secrets office, looking at old boxes of secrets. She began going through them, and she said the names out loud, softly. Philip Marshall, Michael Hastings, Mary Pinchel Meyer, Jack Ruby, Michael Connell, Dorothy Kilgallen, Barry Jennings, William Melvin Hicks, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, Hunter S. Thompson, Gary Webb, Paul Wellstone. "There are more," said Fred, the maintenance man of secrets. "More? A lot more." Skippy, the construction worker and self-taught on YouTube demolition expert, with his ropes, night vision goggles, face paint, grappling hooks, flares, camo pants, and his work shirt from the pizza place with the name tag Samantha, down there in the basement with the child left behind, and Fred, the maintenance man of secrets. "We need to do something about this," said Skippy. "Like what?" said the child left behind. "I don't know," said Skippy. "I'm thinking." He pushed his night vision goggles up on top of his head, and he scratched his forehead with a grappling hook. He got up, walked out the maintenance room door, down the hallway, upstairs to the second floor. He began going through rooms until he found the parallelogram office. He went to the big desk, found a notebook marked Nut Diary. Skippy sat down in the big chair and began going through the diary. It went all the way back to when the Nuts had first come to the White House, Monday through Sunday, day after day. He flipped pages, seeing that President Cosmonaut had been very diligent about keeping the diary, knowing it would be a part of history forever, shining a flashlight in the dark caves, unseen to the general public, showing the insides of the mind of an American president. Each day was filled, even Saturdays and Sundays, no spaces left blank. For each day, every day of the calendar, Skippy found the same thing and nothing else. each day, every Monday, every Tuesday, every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, carefully crafted drawings, dollar signs, boobs, and tanks. Join us next week for another episode of The Americans, where we'll see Colin Kaepernick, Captain Kangaroo, Edward Snowden, the Bubbas, and Randall from Stevens Point kneeling in Ping Pong Square, wondering if they would rather be at the Super Bowl in Minneapolis. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be carefully taught.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. We look forward to hearing from Frank each week. Frank, Chuck Gregory in Fort Lauderdale visited with Frank in Des Moines earlier in the day. We're going to listen to that conversation right about now.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Well, good.
We had a, I've got some guests from Australia with me this week.
Really?
Yeah, David Bradbury.
Mm.
He's a filmmaker.
Huh.
And he's with his 14-year-old daughter. They premiered a film that he's been working on. He's a documentary guy, been around a lot of years. Has done, he's done a filmmaker. He did one on Nicaragua. He's done one on Mexico. He's done one on Vietnam War. He's also the one he's got here that he's previewing is called America and Me, and he's got the, and it starts with him being in South Dakota with the native struggle for the pipeline, and ends with them being at the Washington, D.C. during the inaugural of Trump and the protests, just trying to cover where the beat of folks are. So it's been a good time for me because he stopped in Des Moines. He was on his way from did New York. He did D.C., Chicago. He's on his way to a couple places in California, but mostly because of what Jess and Ruby's action and the discussion it's started in the quarters of the Catholic Worker, and just wanted to check out our community and the old guy me who can speak to these things. And so I've had a great time with David. I'm looking forward to what he does with it, but mostly for an extrovert like me that loves to be in front of a camera. It's been cathartic to speak of what's going on and what's been happening here, and again to share the grief of Jess and Ruby's absence, and at the same time the work goes on as far as the drone campaign here. I mean, we've got trials and three people looking to go to court. We got every reason to keep sending any kind of energies we have to do resistance, to resist here at this drone command. And then we've got other places. The regional Catholic Worker Midwest, in April, they're going to be up in Duluth dealing with another oil pipeline. So that's kind of that's something in the pipes, as we say. And I've got trips planned. There's the 50th anniversary of the Catonsville Nine going on. That'll be in Baltimore the beginning of May. And then the end of July, there's a National Catholic Worker Gathering in Rochester, so New York. So I'm just kind of like, and another thing, the weather has cracked here, and the snow is melting, and you can walk out with not a t-shirt, but a sweatshirt.
Okay.
Hey, that makes the world so much better. I know you guys in Florida do it all the time, but sometimes for the last 3 or 4 weeks, you walk outdoors, you got to have something on or your life's in danger.
Yeah.
And it's got to be warm. That's crazy. I don't know why people live in Iowa. You can quote me on that and just say time sensitive.
Frank
will say this anytime in January in Iowa. Yeah. So that's why I guess I'm feeling better. Things don't change much, but I'm just feeling better for some good reason.
Okay, well, that's good. Feeling better is good. So,
yeah, and I made a great meal today. I took all of the stew meat we had in the freezer. I cooked it till it was pulverized, and I added corn and beans, green beans, just to give it a little flavor, and it was a big hit.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds real good. All right. Well,
I think that's all the reporting I can get to you.
All right. Well, that's okay. You know, it doesn't always have to be long. It's really always good. It's always good hearing from you, Frank. And I wonder if this guy, David Bradbury, will... you know, include some of this in his, some of your conversation with him in his documentary. I hope he will.
Well, I think he's going to try to. Lift up this as a focus. So let's see where it goes.
Well, that sounds great.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing that. Thanks a lot, Frank.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
How are you guys? God bless. Bye bye.
And now a letter in a Boone's Farm bottle. Notes we have received from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. From Jeff Sessions in Washington, D.C., we hear, there are a number of distinctly American symbols that evoke feelings of pride, nationalism, and patriotism. There is the Constitution. There are monuments like Mount Rushmore, the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument, and the Jefferson Memorial. There are structures like the Statue of Liberty and the Liberty Bell. There are buildings like the White House and the Capitol. There are also things that there are many of, American flags, bald eagles, dollar bills, and images of Uncle Sam and the Great Seal of the United States. In the last 15 or so years, these symbols have all been superseded by one image that is so powerful and so overwhelming that it drives some Americans to tears and causes others to act in the most nonsensical and irrational of ways. I am referring to a military uniform. No symbol is more sacred in American life right now than the military uniform. The uniform commands nearly automatic and universal reverence. In Congress, as on television, generals are treated with awed respect, service members spoken of as if they were saints. Liberals are especially careful to make the right noises, obeisance to the uniform having become the shibboleth of patriotism as anti-communism used to be. Across the political spectrum, throughout the media, in private and public life, the pieties and ritual declarations are second nature now. Warriors, heroes, mission, our young men and women in uniform, our brave young men and women, our finest young people. So common has this kind of language become, we scarcely notice it anymore. The cult of the uniform was expanded into what it is today by the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq after 9/11. All military personnel are now heroes. Sporting events have turned into military worship services. Patriotism is now equated with admiration for the military. And of course, the big lie that the troops are defending our freedoms is repeated morning, noon, and night. The cult of the uniform has spread to churches as well. Sometimes military guest speakers are invited for one of these services. Special military appreciation days are also held throughout the year. Prayers are offered for those serving in harm's way, but never for their victims. Some churches put slogans on their signs or in their bulletins about U.S. troops dying for our freedom, like Christ died for our sins. Veterans get preferential treatment and employment. They are recognized in schools during Veterans Day programs. The cult of the uniform is at its worst when it comes to U.S. servicemen fighting senseless, unjust, immoral, and unconstitutional wars. It is okay for someone to put on a military uniform and kill someone halfway around the world who is no threat to America. But it is murder if the same person killed someone here in the United States. A terrorist is anyone who detonates a bomb unless he is wearing a U.S. military uniform. Americans are outraged when an American kills his mother by putting yellow ribbons on their cars saying support the troops when the government tells an American to put on a uniform and go kill some foreigner's mother. The putting on of a uniform allows morality to be put off. The cult of the uniform is the national religion. It must be opposed root and branch. A letter in a Boone's Farm bottle of notes we have received from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. Our next guest of the evening is Karen Katowski. Karen Katowski joins us each month from Mount Jackson, Virginia. She is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. She was stationed at the Pentagon. On the day of 9/11, she has run for Congress. She's a writer. Her writings are featured on Lou Rockwell, the Lou Rockwell website. I'm not sure if it's LouRockwell.com or LouRockwell.org. And she also was a radio show host. And we're going to try and contact Karen Katowski in Mount Jackson, Virginia, right about now.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
All right. Well, it's great to be here. Like, once again, it seems like the weeks pass very quickly, and it's the fourth Thursday all of a sudden. But I did something last Saturday, which is kind of partisan. There was the Ladies March. Well, it wasn't really ladies. It was the Democrats, the anti-Trumpers, the people that don't like Trump, they do a weekly march. And it, I guess Saturday was the one for January. And also Saturday was the 1 year anniversary of Trump taking office or something like that. So anyway, of course my friends are not liberal. And, a number of us, went out there and did a kind of celebration or thank you, Trump. Okay. Now, you know, people could say, well, both of those sides are stupid, or one side is more stupid than the other. And that's fine. It was fun. It was a beautiful day. We had warm weather, which we were all celebrating. So I did that. And, of course, my buddies and my friends and the Democrats were there. I say Democrats. Who knows if they're Democrats? But the anti-Trumpers were there. And we live in Woodstock, Virginia, and it's rural. Shenandoah County is a rural place. We're pretty poor, not as poor as some places, but we're considered lower than norm in Virginia as far as incomes and that kind of thing. There's a lot of working class people and a lot of people who live in our county work in factories that are outside of our county. They commute into work. So we don't have a lot going for us economically. A lot of farming, and that's about it. So it was funny to see the people who hate Trump and who were driving these like fancy cars and dressed up nice and whatever, and they were saying, hey, you know, we're here for the poor and the middle class. And yet all the people that were pro-Trump, it was the poor and middle class. And so, we told them that. We said, we are the poor and middle class. So anyway, we probably had a lot more in common than we had differences. But I'm sorry to say that even in our little rural, small town, should be quite peaceable, one of the Democrats, and this person was actual Democrat, precinct chair in Newmarket, slugged, physically closed fist slug of another man who was on our side over words. Words escalated, and she threw back her fist and gave him a smacker. And he didn't hit her back, thank God. That was good. But, you know, it got me thinking about what drives this kind of, I guess I could call it passion, but it's not a good kind of passion. I mean, it's almost like rage. Passion is good. We think we want to have it. We want to be motivated to make the world a better place, to pursue our dreams, whatever. You know, we want passion. But when you can't control your when you're striking out at people and you can't control your temper, that's not the kind of passion that is positive for anybody, and that's not what we want. As individuals, nobody wants to be that person who, you know, gets so mad they ball up their fist and slug somebody. And this is, she hit somebody she didn't even know. So, she had to be pretty mad because she had no idea if he wasn't going to hit her back or not. I mean, she didn't know him. In my life, I've always been real careful about who I ever even think about hitting because I'm a small person, and if I hit the wrong person, I could get knocked flat. So I don't do that. I cautiously do not go around beating people. But yet, this person was so carried up in the moment of the emotional moment, the passion of her position, or whatever, that she did it. And that's quite a risky thing to do. It's also an assault, obviously, but no charges are pressed or anything like that. But it just got me thinking about what causes this, what causes this kind of behavior. And it's the same on both sides. It doesn't matter. I mean, I guess it could have been flipped and one of our guys could have slugged one of their people. Thank God that didn't happen. But so I'm not saying the Democrats are more, you know, out of control or whatever. I think that it goes on all sides. But the thing that occurred to me, and I think it's pretty, everybody probably knows this already, but, you know, a lot of people in this country, and I don't know why it is, maybe it's because of public schooling or internet, we don't read. We only read things that are like a couple, you know, a tweet long, certain amount of characters, and then we read something else. And because we don't read, we don't learn, we don't digest, we're not wise. We're not very wise. But we're like wise fools, you know, we're very sophomoric. And we think we know something, you know, and whether it's fake news, not fake news, doesn't matter. My fake news is not your fake news and vice versa. But we think we know something, and we're like the sophomores. We're like the wise fool. We think we know it. We're not knowing what we don't know. And not caring, not being motivated to learn more, not taking that position of caution, not just the caution that says, I'm not going to hit somebody I don't know because I could get slaughtered, but also the caution that says, you know, this is what I think. Here's what I think I know. Here's what I've read. Here's what I've learned. Here's what my life has told me. Here's what I care about. But guess what? I don't know everything. I could still be informed. I might still learn something. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you the age of this woman. I mean, the woman was the same age as me, at least in her late 50s. Who does that? You know, we were shocked. But it happens everywhere, across the whole country, across the world, I guess. But in particular in this country, you know, with the pro-president and anti-president, he's become such a demarcation line. But what the problem is, it's not him, or Hillary, had she won. It's not about the party, the politics. They're all scum. I mean, seriously, you can rarely identify a Republican from a Democrat unless there's, you know, unless the cameras are going and they're trying to tell you how different they are. In fact, they're very similar. These politicians, our government doesn't change radically. I mean, if you think it does, look at our national security strategy that they just published a couple days ago. Same old, rehash of, 40s. 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, rehash, same thing, nothing changes. So fundamentally, it's not like the demarcation of politics and passion is really making a difference. It's not. But in terms of the individual, why are we so confident in our perceptions and our beliefs and our knowledge? Why are we so, you know, we live in an age of the internet where you can find literally an infinite amount of information on any topic that you want to find. So you can search, and yet you will still find there's more out there. And if you stay long enough, maybe you can find it, but you know it's out there. We have such access to information, and yet we choose not to take in any information, get a little bit, make an opinion, and then we know. Then we know everything. We know we're right. Well, you know, the ancients had a word for this arrogance and hubris. Right? Arrogance and hubris. It's a sin to the Catholic Church. I mean, these are things that are very human. So I guess what I'm saying is we're not evolved very much. And all this talk for all this talk of, you know, the internet and the networked world and information availability and the possibilities of the now and the future, you know, being so different from what it was 1,000 years ago, 2,000, 5,000 years ago, so different. Guess what? We're not different. we have us humans apparently are extremely vulnerable to thinking we are right all the time and stopping the research and ceasing to ask questions once we find that place that we say, oh, that feels good, let's stop. Let's not learn anything else. That's all I can really think that is going on here. Because the politics of it, these people on the anti-Trump side, and of course the people on the pro-Trump side, you know, we weren't talking to each other about detailed policy, prescriptions and the conditions of the world, or the conditions of the country, or parts of the country, or the people. We weren't really talking in any kind of detail. We were sloganeering, okay, which is dum-dum time. I mean, this is, you know, if you can put on a bumper sticker, and a very non-complicated bumper sticker at that, you know, not very subtle. This is where we were at. And then it leads to, you know, the arrogance, the hubris, the I know everything, you can't convince me, you're wrong, you're stupid. Oh, and by the way, I'm just going to tell you, don't know if it's like this everywhere, but in our little county, we were called by our neighbors, by our liberal neighbors, who did not know us personally, racist, fascist, Nazi. These are the names that, and this is this little freaking town that I live in, and these names of our neighbors calling us that. And I'm not even sure they understood historically or in any other way what these terms actually mean. They're just throwing them around. These are handy words. These are bumper sticker words. Let's lay them out there. Anyway, it really makes human beings look dumb on all sides. And you have to say, why have we chosen to be so stupid when we live in an era where we don't have to be? But again, I think it's a testament to the fundamental nature of human beings, which, frankly, it hasn't changed, which is why we can learn from books written a long time ago, and probably books written 2,000 years from now, we'll be talking about the same problem, the problem of human beings and how our minds work and how lazy we are, how incredibly intellectually lazy we are. And, of course, lazy also in terms of self-control. We don't want to use our minds, and we're really willing to use our fists. Not a good thing. Anyway, saw it with my own two eyes on Saturday. Very shocked. I didn't like it. It was the reality. It was what we saw. So I do think we live in a great time, the most wonderful time ever, to learn things, and yet we are not learning very much. So anyway, that's my message for January. Let's learn a little bit more. Let's try to not be so arrogant. Let's not be wise fools, you know. Let's recognize that we don't know everything all the time, and we're not always right.
Well, that was very powerful, Karen. Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Could it be that the powers that be, the those folks that are in office and all, are playing us against each other?
They must be at
each other's throats.
That's true, and I think always politics. You know, we hold up democracy as being this wonderful thing about self-rule. But we don't realize that democracy is also very, very vulnerable to this kind of thing. You know, people, parties, groups, you know, emphasizing our separateness and then, you know, playing each other into that. Because democracy is about getting a representative, and that guy wants something from us. He needs something, you know, he needs power. We're the only way he can get it. So he's going to play us. Politics and parties are a big part of the problem. They certainly push us into these dumb channels of thinking where we're not questioning and we're assuming that everybody's our enemy and that we're right and they hate us because we're right, and then we just cease to process after that. And it's definitely part of politics, and we should be resisting, when we hear these messages from on high. And I don't know, I mean, I don't listen to a lot of talk radio, but yes, you know, I mean, this is in some ways talk radio and news media came to life in our little town in front of the courthouse on Saturday. Mm. Just came to life. And it was ugly. It was very ugly.
I don't know. For myself, I love to engage someone in a discussion and not a fight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, let me tell you, I did have one high point. I'll go ahead and say that. So a guy, we were us pro-Trumpers or whatever, were holding signs. We weren't really saying much, but holding signs. And a guy came in front of us with an impeached Trump thing. So he was anti-Trump. And he was sparring with one of the other guys, and I was just listening. But he was saying stuff I kind of liked because he was anti-government. He was anti-central control. He had contempt for government. And I think he said, well, I didn't vote for Hillary either. You know, so I'm like, yeah, there you go. Now you're getting somewhere. You're rejecting this whole premise that's put upon us. And so I said, hey, you know, I'm kind of anti-government too. And then the guy standing next to me said, yeah, I'm anti-government too. So basically here we were, three of us, all anti-government. And then guess what? The guy who was being all rowdy, who was anti-government, who we liked and we admired him for that, he left to go somewhere else where it was more productive.
Oh, well.
We agreed. that was one little high point. And we were actually conversing with each other, which is all what it's about. Yeah. Yes, if you talk to somebody.
Exactly. Karen, thank you so much. We always appreciate having you on the show, and we look forward to it next month.
Absolutely. Okay, have a great month. Have a great show.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
At Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
General Quarters, all hands at your battle stations.
Be nervous, Mount your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here. You who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Bam, check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are until I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time, join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Julius Alafong. Julius Alafong joins us each month from Yaoundé, Cameroon. Julius sends along this description of his segment tonight. He says, President Trump's description of African countries as shithole countries has revealed what African youths in their majority think of Africa. The adage, maturity begins when we start trying to fix ourselves instead of blaming others, is truly being accepted by African youths of today. They are no more afraid of insults. They try to see where they went wrong, and instead of blaming the messenger, they focus on the message. And now, Julius Alafong from Cameroon.
Hello, Chuck. Hello, Mike. Good evening to our listeners. This time around, I will be elaborating on President Trump's outing when he described African countries as shithole countries. I'm going to dwell on this because this has created a lot of debate amongst African youth, especially those who are active on the internet. So he said, why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here? So, is Africa a shithole continent? Are African countries shithole countries? First of all, if we try to look at the noun, the meaning of the word shithole, shithole is a vulgar slang. It is an extremely dirty place, a shabby, an unpleasant place. It is a place where people don't like to live in. It is a place where people go there only to exploit and to run away for better places. A shithole country or a shithole place could be a place where there is nothing done to improve upon the well-being or the well-being of that place. When African leaders spend their time to go treat themselves medically abroad, in Europe, in Canada, in America, it means, or they are simply telling us that back home in the African countries, they don't have better medical institutions. But during an election period, they will tell you how they are going to improve upon the health facility, the educational facility, and even the economy. But where do they snatch money that they steal from African countries? They snatch them in Switzerland, in France. Most of our leaders have sumptuous buildings, houses in Europe, in America. Most of them have huge bank accounts, stashed in Switzerland, in France. Most of them make us believe that the ideal place for us to live is Europe, because even their own children don't school in Cameroon or in African countries. Let me talk of Cameroon. Most of them schooling in France, in America. I mean, most of their children. And they would tell you that back home in Cameroon, they have improved upon the educational facility. They have improved upon the health facility. And that road infrastructure is the best. Probably because they just want to win vote and stay in power. So in reaction to this comment, some internet youth who are active on the internet have made very interesting contributions. And most of these contributions are very positive. In fact, positive in the sense that they agree with President Trump. They agree with President Trump because they are now realizing that it is important to search for the problem plaguing Africa within and not without. In fact, they are abandoning the blame game, always blaming the West. Oh, France has done this, America has done that. But what are you doing? Because most of the times, what we do is even worse than what most of these European colonizing states or neo-colonial empires are doing on African state. Let me take some of the reactions. The first one says, respect is not something one gets through a decree, but only through achievement and behavior. Some African leaders allegedly take bribes from Western countries to let them come and secretly bury nuclear waste on our continent. If such countries are not shitholes, I wonder what they are. They give them the raw material for free and accept its waste in return, and at the same time ask for respect. Sometimes say thank you to those who criticize, who ridicule, who abuse, and who molest you, because it is an opportunity for you to wake up and face the challenge and face your weaknesses. What cannot kill you will make you strong. Thank you, Mr. Donald J. Trump. So he is trying to say, African leaders cannot just go around and mortgage the future of Africans and sell our raw materials for free just to turn around to blame Donald Trump. Because some African leaders have blamed Trump for his utterances. And the worst is even the African Union that came out strongly to condemn Trump. Why is he condemning Donald Trump? That's why another writer said Africa is a shithole. He affirms, he accepts with Trump that Africa is a shithole country, a shithole continent. He says this: any society that brooks systemic exploitation and corruption is a shithole. The state of Africa over the past 50 years indicates a steep decline. Murder, drug addiction, and political thievery are flavors of the day. When the youth is taught nothing has value, moral decadence is a consequent. Africa is a shithole. Our economy is exploitive with corrupt politics. Everyone knows Africa is a layer cake of pathologies, degraded economies, and greater percentage of African budgets are financed by the outside world. We do not need crazy Trump to tell us we are living in shitholes. The political corruption enforces this economically crippled system. The decay travels up and down in a symbiotic feedback. Both ends along the meat section of the fish stinking. Politicians are simply state looters and incapable of formulating economic policies to alleviate hardship on the masses. The only intelligent thing Trump has done so far is the perfect description of Africa. Most movies portray good or evil, good over evil, But Africa's story does not end well because of leadership paralysis. A cool guy, Mark G. White ruler, is justified to refer to Africa as shithole because we have slack-jawed lackey leaders who cannot even determine the export prices. African children of a lesser god? The African god is a shithole. Gaddafi tried to create a United States of Africa, but was murdered by the US government supporting a coup and bombed Libya's army. Gaddafi offered billions in gold to create a gold-backed African currency, which Europe and America stood in opposition. Who turned Africa into a shithole? The IMF controls development and finance. People of color are at the bottom of this list with chicken investment. The purpose of the United States of Africa was to cut down Africa's dependency ratio on the IMF by creating a development bank. But a shoulder-headed white ruler and his cohort murdered that vision. Did I hear the important AU or African Union demanding an apology from Trump? Chuckle. Why is it that the second largest continent by land, with 54 countries, blessed bountifully with natural resources, yet so sad and strange? 18 of the poorest countries by GDP per capita are in Africa. The shithole continent is full of knuckle-draggers, leaders with tyrannical appetite and charity withholders. Africa is a shithole continent as a result of shithole leaders. The shit-headed Trump was damn right. This is from a guy called Kojo Frimpong. So many other those who participate on the social media have been reacting to this. And we see that generally they are in supportive of Trump. Supportive of Trump because they believe that what Trump is saying is a clear truth. And they believe this truth should revolt us. It should make us think otherwise. It should make us think doubly of coming out of this shit instead of complaining, instead of killing the messenger. Take the message seriously. One guy said Trump is very brilliant. He said the president of the United States of America has just described African states as a shithole countries. That is well done. Trump has shown Africans what really lies behind the sweet words used by Europeans to describe Africa in order to better exploit them. If speaking of shithole country, he thought of Cameroon, then he is persuasively right. This is because in Cameroon, to build a road, a bridge, assemble computers, build football stadia, foreign companies are solicited. In the 1970s, a Cameroonian owned a road construction company, but this company was killed by the same Cameroonian leaders, by the same people who rule Cameroon, in favor of Western companies or foreign companies from France, precisely, their former colonial master. So this, in the long, we see that they spend their time employing foreigners, and Cameroonians who are qualified or who should be employed to do these jobs are forced to flee to other countries in search for greener pasture. So I think we should leave Trump alone. What Trump has just described about Africa is the simple truth. So instead of killing Trump, instead of shooting at Trump, go and check his message. Is he right or is he wrong? I think he's right. Africa needs to work hard to come out of its present shithole position. Thank you, Choke. Thank you, Mike. I'll be back next month. Bye-bye.
And now, Milk Duds Are Forever, a review of the new Hollywood blockbuster, The Post, from New American Dream movie critic Sancho Panza. As Robert Crowley, CIA agent, says, I can guarantee that the press will either keep very, very quiet about you or will make a fool out of you. We still do control the press, and if we say to trash an enemy, they will do it. We control most of the major publishers, or if we don't, They would never dare to put out anything that would get us upset. Hell, we have our man right there in the New York Times, and they jump through the hoops, believe me. The Times is in our pocket, absolutely. One thing the CIA's Frank Wisner did was to build up a very cooperative media, and that includes book publishers. Even if some big publishing house printed a sensitive book, it would never see the light of day. Why? Because our people would block it. It's that simple. They would ruin you as they have ruined many other authors who have gone before you for daring to speak ill of them. Can you imagine the New York Times reviewing it? I think not. I think not ever. One phone call from us and into the wastebasket with any kind of commentary, good or bad. The blanket of silence would descend upon you. Believe me, silly idealists somehow believe we have a free press here, but it is as tightly controlled as it is in Russia, as in Hitler's Germany. Milk does it forever. A review of the new Hollywood blockbuster, The Post, from New American Greed movie critic Sancho Panza. Our next guest of the evening is Michael Annis. Michael Annis joins us from Denver. Michael is the executive editor of Howling Dog Press. He is a poet. He's an activist. He's going to appear on the show tonight with Rosanna Frechette. Michael Annis and Rosanna Frechette in Denver.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Mike. It's good to be back on the New American Dream. I brought a guest to the show tonight, my friend and often collaborator, Rosanna Frechette. Among other things, Rosanna is a writer, a poet, a performance artist, and a socially conscious bohemian political activist who is responsible for several important initiatives here in Denver. She is currently working again with me as part of my new ensemble, The Ghost Ship Rats, where the two of us and several musicians will be doing a musical performance of my piece, Wolves at the Mall, at the annual Denver Poetry Rodeo this coming April 14th at the Mercury Cafe. For listeners who might want to read Wolves at the Mall, it was published in the December issue of Penn Magazine, edited by Mike. In celebration of the first anniversary of the current women's resistance movement, and to honor it, Rosanna will be performing two poems written by the incredible Russian poet Marina Tsvetaeva. I will follow with a poem by the great German poet Bertolt Brecht. Each poet is introduced through the notes written by American poet Carolyn Forché in her comprehensive anthology, Against Forgetting, 20th Century Poetry of Witness, published by W.W. Norton in 1993. I personally recommend this book as indispensable to anyone with social consciousness and political resistance as one of the most inspiring and important anthologies of the last 50 years. So with pleasure, I give you Rosanna Frechette.
Considered one of the greatest poets of the 20th century, Marina Tsvetaeva was a friend of both Anna Akhmatova and Osip Mandelstam. After the revolution, her husband fought in the Civil War with the White Russians, and upon their defeat, she fled to Prague and Paris. She lived in exile until 1939, but was estranged from other exiles, partly because her admiration for the poetry of Vladimir Mayakovsky was considered pro-Soviet. Disaffected, she returned to the Soviet Union in spite of official hostility toward her. During the 1930s, her daughter was twice imprisoned, and her husband was jailed and murdered by the secret police. Evacuated from Moscow with her son in 1941, impoverished and unable to write or publish, she committed suicide and was buried in an unmarked grave. Poems to Czechoslovakia, a late sequence, was written in protest over the Nazi occupation of that country. From Poems to Czechoslovakia, 6. They took quickly. They took hugely, took the mountains and their entrails. They took our coal and took our steel from us. Lead they took also and crystal. They took the sugar and they took the clover. They took the north and took the west. They took the hive and took the haystack. They took the south from us and took the east. Dairy they took and Tatras they took. They took the near at hand and far away. But worse than taking paradise on earth from us, they won the battle for our native land. Bullets they took from us, they took our rifles, minerals they took, and comrades too. But while our mouths have spittle in them, the whole country is still armed. 8. What tears in eyes now, weeping with anger and love, Czechoslovakia's tears, Spain in its own blood. And what a black mountain has blocked the world. Light. It's time. It's time. It's time to give back to God his ticket. I refuse to be in the madhouse of the inhuman. I refuse to live with the wolves of the marketplace. I refuse to howl among the sharks of the plain. I refuse to swim down where moving backs make a current. I have no need of holes for ears nor prophetic eyes. To your mad world, there is one answer: to refuse. A white low sun. A white low sun, low thunder clouds, and back behind the kitchen garden's white wall, graves on the sand, serried ranks of straw-stuffed forms, as large as men, hang from some crossbeam. Through the staked fence, moving about, I see a scattering of soldiers, trees, and roads, and an old woman standing by her gate, who chews on a black hunk of bread with salt. What have these gray huts done to anger you, my God? And why must so many be killed? A train passed, wailing, and the soldiers wailed as its retreating path got trailed with dust. Better to die or not to have been born than hear that plaining, piteous convict wail about these beautiful, dark-eyebrowed women. It's soldiers sing these days. Oh, Lord God.
Bertolt Brecht was born in Augsburg, the capital of Bavarian Swabia. His early plays are fine examples of expressionist drama and exhibit the radical staging techniques that were his trademark. One of the most important poets and playwrights of the 20th century, he is most famous in the United States for the Threepenny Opera, a scathing attack on the corruption of the Weimar Republic and on capitalism in general. Brecht was a committed Marxist. The Nazi Party had marked him for execution as early as 1923, and in 1933 was forced to flee Germany. His 16-year exile brought him to Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and the United States, where he was called before the House Committee for Un-American Activities. He returned to East Berlin in 1949, where he founded a theater company and remained an independent voice in spite of official pressure. From a German War Primer was written against the pre-war German leadership, particularly the house painter Adolf Hitler. From a German War Primer. Amongst the highly placed, it is considered low to talk about food. The fact is, they have already eaten. The lowly must leave this earth without having tasted any good meat. For wondering where they come from and from where they are going, the fine evenings find them too exhausted. They have not yet seen the mountains and the great sea when their time is already up. If the lowly do not think about what's low, they will never rise. The bread of the hungry has all been eaten. Meat has become unknown. Useless the pouring out of the people's sweat. The laurel groves have been lopped down. From the chimneys of the arms factories rises smoke. The house painter speaks of great times to come. The forests will grow, the fields still bear, the cities still stand, the people still breathe. On the calendar, the day is not yet shown. Every month, every day lies open still. One of those days is going to be marked with a cross. The workers cry out for bread. The merchants cry out for markets. The unemployed were hungry. The employed are hungry now. The hands that lay folded are busy again. They are making shells. Those who take the meat from the table teach contentment. Those for whom the contribution is destined demand sacrifice. Those who eat their fill speak to the hungry of wonderful times to come. Those who lead the country into the abyss call ruling too difficult for ordinary men. When the leaders speak of peace, the common folk know that war is coming. When the leaders curse war, the mobilization order is already written out. Those at the top say peace and war are of different substance, but their peace and their war are like wind and storm. War grows from their peace, like son from his mother. He bears her rightful features. Their war kills whatever their peace has left over. On the wall was chalked, "They want war." The man who wrote it has already fallen. Those at the top say, "This way to glory." Those down below say, "This way to the grave."
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, a blast from the past that turns out to be not that long ago. A New American Dream radio show news note regarding the NBC internal investigation of Brian Williams. As you recall, NBC's news president, Deborah Turnus, announced the internal investigation in a memo to staff. As you would expect, we have a team dedicated to gathering the facts to help us make sense of all that has transpired, Turnus wrote. We're working on what the next best steps are. And when we have something to communicate, we will, of course, share it with you. And that's so cool. Deborah Turnus, the president of NBC, that is way up there, pretty high in American society, and she is going to investigate that one of her star reporters lied to the American people. That is so awesome. We are pretty sure by the time she is done, she will tell us why NBC colluded with the CIA and the Israeli Mossad to produce the 9/11 hoax and production, the fake Boston bombing and Sandy Hook. That is so cool. We can't wait because it's so cool because NBC is investigating itself and they are going to tell us the truth. Nice. This is what makes this country so cool. And now a word from New American Dream bowling writer Jeffrey Lebowski.
Brian Williams' greatest lie. No controversy ensued when Williams and NBC colleague Tom Brokaw repeatedly upheld the Warren Commission's lone assassin conspiracy theory on November 22, 2013. NBC suspended Brian Williams for 6 months on February 10, 2015. The fashionable anchor admitted to lying about being involved in a life-threatening combat situation while reporting in Iraq over a decade ago. Yet a survey of Williams' career indicates this isn't the first time he's been dishonest with the American people. In one important instance, while broadcasting from Dallas, Texas on November 22, 2013, Williams began the NBC Nightly News by remarking, "We're in Dealey Plaza, just across from the sixth-floor window in the Texas School Book Depository building, where three shots were fired 50 years ago today that changed the course of American history." The statement flies in the face of honest reportage by upholding the powerful myth devised by the Warren Commission that former U.S. Marine and intelligence operative Lee Harvey Oswald was the principal assassin and President Kennedy's murder. The American public can now point to overwhelming evidence presented by attorney Mark Lane, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, the U.S. Congress, and a host of other researchers, indicating that the three shots fired from the Texas School Book Depository was a CIA-contrived conspiracy theory. In fact, at least three sharpshooter teams killed Kennedy and wounded Texas Governor John Connally in Dealey Plaza in a triangulated crossfire. Williams said, from November 22, 1963, just over 6 hours after the shots were fired from the building here behind us, meaning this place and this city and our country would never be the same. Thus, not only is Williams perpetuating a lie, one might safely conclude he's also a conspiracy theorist. And he's among the world's most famous journalists working at a major U.S. broadcast network that intends to bring him back after a six-month hiatus for a second chance. Later in this November 22, 2013 broadcast, Williams introduced fellow NBC anchor Tom Brokaw. On November 22nd in 1963, Williams begins, "Tom Brokaw was a young reporter in Omaha. He read the news of the assassination on the air, in fact." Amazing. Amazingly, after 50 years, Brokaw had yet to exercise journalistic due diligence by publicly questioning the implausible government cover story suggesting that Oswald killed Kennedy. Nor does Brokaw take the opportunity to do so during this broadcast, thus perpetuating one of the U.S. government's greatest lies. Thus, two of America's most prominent journalists flagrantly misled the American public on this notable 2013 broadcast. Yet no controversy surrounds their truly astounding assertions. Perhaps we need to ask, how differently would Williams or Brokaw behave as official press agents for the U.S. government? Well, Brian Williams' deception points to a larger truth. A major career journalist's incorrect or embellished personal recollections are the stuff of controversy. While in contrast, when it comes to the country's most momentous events, from the JFK assassination to 9/11, the war on terror, weapons of mass destruction, star journalists are compelled to spread and perpetuate massive lies. So long as those falsehoods are sanctioned and promoted by America's national security state, these celebs are allowed to proceed without question. Indeed, such figures are lauded for their journalistic service. The public be damned. Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. It was for me the world of Dick and Jane, the world that every child should inhabit, a world with yellow brick roads, the security of parental love, full stomachs, overflowing hearts filled with warm feelings. Bob Keesham, Captain Kangaroo, forward to the world of Dick and Jane. The American dream has dangled before our eyes for over 200 years. The American dream is the goal that we Americans hold on to when everything else is gone. The American dream is our ideal. Too bad it's just a dream. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns. While the world waits, fist clenched, eyes blazing, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. We pick up our story after Michael M., staff member at Sun God Group Home, has sped off on his moped to tell the people at the workshop that there's a sit-down strike taking place in the Sun God driveway, and they will be a little late. On his way, he swerved to miss a little girl, jumped the curb, rammed his blue flake helmet into a war memorial for World War II at the city park, breaking the war memorial. And now the National Guard and police have stormed the park and taken Michael M. away in the National Guard helicopter. Michael M. was in prison for having rammed World War II with a blue flake helmet, but he loves Homeland, and all he really wants to do is get free so he can get registered for the Home Helper Show drawing, make his wife proud, his children happy. He escaped prison when another prisoner gave up his own gold teeth to the guards in exchange for M's release. And M has now arrived at the home of the family of the little girl that he almost killed with his moped. They're having cereal in the kitchen. The girl parked her elbows on the table and pressed her hands flat together and leaned her forehead against them. She closed her eyes. "Oh, God," she began in a voice that made M smile. "Thank you for the rain and the corn and the farmers and also for the moisture. Amen, oh, God." M renewed working his cereal scooping. "You're Mr. M." "Yep." "Daddy, here's M," she sang, running into the living room as M slurped. They walked back into the kitchen holding hands. "Glory seems to believe you're the man who tried to run her over." M chewed and looked at him, then the little girl. He recalled the girl in the crosswalk, the black SUV, the crash into the war memorial. He stopped chewing. He swallowed. "I didn't try to," he said. "I tried not to. The throttle sticks. I remember you, the man howled. His face flooded red. He pointed a finger at M's nose. You are the evil one. Yum. M shoved his spoon deep into his cereal bowl, which he'd refilled. Oh, my God. A tall, thin, attractive woman walked into the kitchen and put her hands on her cheeks as if she were performing a part in a play. It's him! What is he doing here? She screamed at her husband. He's hungry, look at that, said the girl, pointing to the cereal on the counter and M's lap on the floor. He was outside, the man said, stuffing cereal boxes into his arms. Grab him, said the woman to the man whose hands were already full. The girl moved in front of him and spread her arms like a crosswalk guard. He didn't hit me, she said. She put her thumb and forefinger almost together next to her eye to signify that much. Could have, easy, she said. The man set the boxes back down, put his arm around his wife's shoulders, and pulled her close. M stealthily reached for a box he'd not yet tried and began to pour while keeping his eyes on the couple. Why are you here? Asked the man, tired, out of breath. I told you, said M, his mouth filled with homeland chunks. You escaped. M nodded, chewing. Why? Asked the man. Why? Why would you escape? Said the woman. You are there for a reason. They let me go. Oh, said the man and woman together. I'd like to get registered, said M, wiping his jaw with a napkin from the pile on the counter. Oh, to vote, yeah, said the man. Very important. Good for you. TV, said M, pointing to the other room. I want to register to be on TV, too, said the girl. The Home Helper Show, said M. We love that show. The man and woman bent their knees and pointed fingers straight at M. That's how we got this kitchen, said the man. And the pool, the girl pointed toward the backyard. You need to get registered, said the woman. I can help you, said the man. You do something for me. Well, meanwhile, on the west side, on 7th Avenue, a child lay in the street on its side, motionless. Its mother sat on the edge of the road holding the other one. Next to the mother stood a cardboard cutout of a smiling man with black hair and a white shirt rolled to his elbows and a bright red tie, gesturing with thumbs tucked inside pointer finger. A tape recording played from the cardboard cutout. We will take on the complicated problem of coordinating summertime lawn watering schedules. We will stop pre-dawn jaywalking by exercisers. Vote for me and help Homeland. My party is dedicated to doing whatever it takes to bring justice and peace and prosperity. Sweat dripped down the cardboard candidate. An F-16 perpetrator with a sun god flag on its side roared still in the distance and then appeared. In the same instant, it dropped its bombs expertly on the house across the road, which exploded and caught fire beautifully. The mother leaned and reached to grab the arm of the child in the street with blood running out of its anus and dragged it closer to her. Lions yawned in the grass nearby and raga music drifted down the block. Down the road came a shining red pickup full of men and women. On the sides were magnetic signs. Pastors love Dick. The ministers chanted and sang and worshiped, fellowshipped as F-16s zooming at treetop level tore up the neighborhood with machine gun fire. The preachers pointed at the mother struggling to feed one child while pulling her old one out of the path of the oncoming religious leaders. God loves you, child, they shouted. Hallelujah! Vote for Dick! Dick and Jane will make it rain. The pickup's front tire ran over the child's legs and stopped. The minister ceased chanting and looked wide-mouthed at the scene behind the woman. The dead lawns were filled with children, mouths open, stomachs bulging, ribs sticking from tight skin. The children chewed on bullets, gnawing at them from different angles, trying to figure out how to eat them. Mothers were sticking M16 Remington cartridges into the mouths of their children. Stacks of shells were small arms, 20-millimeter F-16 cannon rounds, and large oblong bombs were placed in neat piles among the dead babies and the infants sucking and choking on the varieties of ammunition. The cardboard cutout candidate smiled and said, daytime lawn watering, jaywalkers, round baseballs, round basketballs. How did this happen? Said one of the woman ministers wearing a blue shirt and white collar. This yard is a mess. They need to mow, paint this house and water, pick up the yard. Let us pray for these people right here, right now. The ministers, packed under the bed of the pickup truck, bowed their heads, folded their hands at their waists. Some held hands. A couple of them put their open hands up to the sky, laid their heads back as if to drink rainwater, and closed their eyes, gently swaying back and forth. One woman began to hum, Faith of Our Fathers. Oh, God, began a male minister from Homeland. Please, thank you. Yes, sir, no, sir. These are the words that made our land strong. What we need is discipline, responsibility, honor, and integrity. Today's young people have too much given to them, O Lord. We ask that some be taken away by thy mighty hand. Smite them, dear Jesus, across the mouth. Yes, a woman pastor from Franklin stepped in, shoving between two others to reach the edge of the pickup and address the dying people on the lawn. Yes, Lord, she shouted. We will kill. We Christians will bomb and rape and steal and lie. We might as well call ourselves Teletubbies as Christians. We've turned it into a nonsense word. We will destroy the earth with our rapacious avarice, our negligence, our sloth, and our apathy. We thank you, Jesus, Yahweh, Jehovah, for being there in our hour of need. When the telephone rings, dear God, and we're outside and we think, please, God, don't let them hang up till I get there. And it's my dear child who needs a ride home from swimming. And can I find the keys? Where did I park the car? You were there with us, Jesus. Through all of that, oh, dearest God, for this we pray. And we will go to the glittering church and find clothes, a new shiny BJ, red, black, gold, silver, awesome, yellow. And we will sit there and praise you, Lord Jesus Christ, and listen to the pastor. He dares say nothing about the poor or poverty or our own riches at home, our bank accounts, our ultimate concern for our own undisturbed routines. Nothing about building bombs to kill rather than bread to feed. And oh God, we do not remind him. He will never mention, thou shalt not kill, or the true spirit of Christianity. And this will be repeated week after week in thousands of millions of churches around the country, and we shall never be bothered with the real you, Jesus. Who would rather see these crystal crappers laid down brick upon brick and our own phony hearts torn from our chests because we are scoundrels, Lord? Praise you, Jesus. Amen, said the ministers in unison. The pickup rolled off the legs of the boy. His mother hauled him into the coarse grass by one arm and stared up at the ministers through eyes made large by the retreating of her skin. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that brings us very close to the end of another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. I'd like to remind you we are broadcasting live on revolution.radio. And they deserve your support. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all the interviews, the technical work, everything that makes this show possible. And thanks to our guests, Julius Oliphant, Karen Katowski, Michael Annis, Rosanna Frechette, Phil Ferruccio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you will find information about all of our regular guests, and also the show archives, newdream.us. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you would like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy Nugay. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawkstone. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Oh, the shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has McHeath, dear, and he keeps it out of sight. When the shark bites with his teeth, dear, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears McHeath, dear, so there's never a trace of red. On the sidewalk, Sunday morning, lies a body oozing life. Someone sneaking around the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? From a tugboat by the river, a cement bag dropping down. The cement's just for the weight, dear. Betcha Mackey's back in town. Louis Miller disappeared, dear, after drawing out his cash. And McHeath bends like a sailor. Did our boy do something rash? Sulky, tawdry, Jenny Diver, Polly Peachum, Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right, dear. Now that Mackey's back in town. Good night, everyone. Thank you for joining us.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Take a look around, kid. What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country is founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio! Safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say,